Good morning and welcome to One Land, Many Voices. Your hosts this morning and every fourth Friday of the month at 9 a.m. are Will Seaman and myself, Hala Goris. Good morning, Will.
Good morning, Hala, and good morning to all of our listeners. And this morning, I'm going to ask our listeners once again to grab that pen or pencil and some paper and write down this phone number, 503-231-8187. That's our studio line here, and we want to hear from you this morning.
That's right. To call in with your questions or comments, please dial 503-231-8187. With us in the studio this morning, back to continue our discussion of Zionism and related topics, is our special guest, a local guest, Rabbi Joey Wolf. Thank you, Rabbi Joey, for joining us once again on One Land, Many Voices.
It's a pleasure to be here this morning.
Rabbi Joseph Wolf is the rabbi of Havura Shalom, a Jewish fellowship active in Portland since 1978, a congregation that prides itself on broad participation and diversity, as well as responsible social action. Rabbi Joey has been at Havura since 1987.
Rabbi Joey is also a member of the National Board of Rabbis for Human Rights and serves on the Rabbinic Advisory Committee for Brit Tzedek B'Shalom.
And this morning, we return once again to the topic of Zionism. Sometime back, we talked with Joel Covell, author of Overcoming Zionism, Creating a Single Democratic State in Israel-Palestine. And not too long ago, we continued that discussion with Zachary Lockman, New York University professor of Middle East Studies and History, for a somewhat more historical discussion of Zionism.
So back in October, we had our first conversation with Rabbi Joey, and today it's your turn, our listeners, to call in with your questions and comment on the topic. Your turn to join this very important conversation. We're opening the phone lines for a full hour, so please give us a call at 503-231-8187.
That's right, 503-231-8187. We want to have a big, open discussion. We want to have any kind of questions, any comments you'd like on this topic. We, of course, hope and, well, we're pretty certain that everyone's going to be very civil and respectful in this conversation. We do have a phone call on the line, so let's go to that caller. Caller, what's your question or comment on Zionism this morning?
Good morning. How are you guys?
Terrific. How are you this morning?
I'm very, very good. Hala, good to hear your voice. Will, nice to hear your voice. And Rabbi, assalamu alaikum.
Oh, assalamu alaikum.
Okay. I read something that I find quite disturbing. There's an author named Richard Becker. I don't know if you're familiar with Richard Becker's work or not.
I am not.
Okay. He wrote a book called Palestine, Israel, and the American Empire, and also Myths, Empire, and the Middle East. All right. According to Mr. Becker, Rabbi, there are Jewish-only roads in the West Bank that are well-lit and well-paved and for Jewish use only. All right? If a Palestinian car is allegedly caught on the road by the Israel Defense Forces, these cars are pulled over, they are confiscated, and the Palestinian is sent on his way. All right? Now, I understand that an official from the Israeli government spoke to the soldier and asked how people know that this is only Jewish-only roads. And according to the Israeli soldier, he got quite angry with her, and he said, everybody knows. And she said to him in response, well, how come there are no signs on these roads indicating that they are Jewish-only roads? And the Israeli soldier again got disgruntled, and he said, because the information on the signs might fall into the wrong hands and will be used against us, the state of Israel. Now, I don't want to get defensive. I don't want to put you on a defensive, Rabbi. I'm a first-generation Jewish American and a Holocaust from a Holocaust survivor family, and although Israel is claiming that it's not an apartheid state, aren't separate roads an indication of apartheid?
Okay,
thank you very, very much, and I certainly will take my answers off the air.
Yes. Okay. Bye-bye. Thanks for the question.
Right.
It's a very sad state of affairs, to be honest with you. And I was just on one of those roads. And it makes me, frankly, feel very, very sad. Makes me feel a sense of revulsion, to be honest. In the name of security, in the name of setting up a network of bypass institutions, you should say, on the West Bank, the state has constructed all kinds of possibilities for people to feel security amidst a region in which there are large numbers of alien, as it were, or indigenous people living, people who've lived there, you know, or whose families have lived there for hundreds of years. This is a sad state of affairs. I never liked the term bypass. I always felt uncomfortable with it, and yet that's really what exists on the West Bank. I had the feeling in some kind of grotesque kind of artistic scenario that in fact, it was sort of like the next thing they were going to do is build a Mobius strip. You would go underneath a mountain driving as a Jewish vehicle, and you'd come out somewhere in a valley hundreds of miles away in order to feel safe. But it's, without any question, it's a bifurcated kind of sense of reality. Someone was recently commenting, I can't remember where I saw this, but it was nothing, no great revelation. It's one thing to feel secure on one side of, on one road or on one side of the wall. It's another thing to experience what it feels in order to be humiliated or excluded on another side of the wall or traveling the roads that are authorized for the other population, the other. So that's a
whole. But Rabbi Joey, you talk about in the name of security. Okay. These are Jewish-only roads on Palestinian land in contravention of international law. Okay, so isn't security a pretext for theft of land and expansion?
I, at this point, have little doubt about that. For years, I've been feeling and claiming that we needed to get out of that territory. It made us into enablers of a bifurcated regime, which I considered to be totally, inherently unfair, unjust. At this point, to me, it's ugly. So there's no question it's about confiscation of land. I myself saw, sadly, as a board member of Rabbis Human Rights, I was going to document and to film the situation of one Palestinian farmer. So he had trees. He had olive trees. And some of them were recently cut in half by settlers who were willfully expanding the settlement and harassing this guy. There was a very large individual who was harassing this guy. He was not what any one of us would call an activist, much less an insurrectionist in any way. He was trying to protect his property, and yet it was clear that what was happening was his private property was being confiscated by settlers. So I can't defend that in any way. I find it repugnant.
Well, let's go ahead and take our next caller. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
First off, I was raised in a church, and the pastor ended up getting kind of pushed out of there because he was suggesting that, you know, that there are as many paths to the Lord God as there are created souls. And I've always believed something along those lines. And the other day, someone was telling me that Jesus was a Palestinian, you know, and he was born in Bethlehem and Jerusalem area and all that. Can you talk about that? Because I don't like being lied to, but, you know, you look on the old maps, and Jesus was a Palestinian, wasn't he?
Jesus was a Palestinian.
I'm not trying to be provocative or anything, but I'd like to hear your comment, and I'll take it off the air. Thanks.
As far as I know, Jesus was a Palestinian. Jesus was an Inuit. Jesus was Irish. And
Jesus was a Jew.
Jewish.
Yes. Do we have any other callers online? Let's go to our next caller.
Hello?
Good morning.
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi.
You can hear me?
We can hear you. Go ahead with your question, please.
I'm used to a swish of something happening first. Listen, I realize you have to be intellectual, but I'm at the point anymore where all this horror and evil, that's what I call it, the politics of this health care reform and this finance and all the ugliness and going on in Mexico and every place in the world, the horrors going on there, and then this continuing thing in Gaza, and our country is evil, continuing wars and horrible amounts of money for war. I can't be intellectual. I'm full of rage and anger. No, I can't do anything about it. And that's the truth. I know that. And even if I organize, this keeps going on. And then I was listening. I probably shouldn't do it to torture myself, but I happened to come on C-SPAN 2 or something, this APAC or something meeting, and listening to Hillary Clinton and a little bit to I don't even want to say that. I'm so full of anger. I'm not going to be able to speak. And that senator from South Carolina and what Hillary Clinton said, the word, I just can't say that they were so horrible.
Do you have a question for our guest today?
No, I don't want to be intellectual. I just want to express, I mean, you could be intellectual, but I think this is evil. And to be, I guess you have to. And I think it's wrong, and that's where I'm coming from.
Thank you for listening to One Land, Many Voices. We appreciate your call and your comments. Let's go on to our next caller. Go ahead, caller.
Okay, while we're waiting for our next call, I want to make sure people are getting the phone number here. It's 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, if you want to join the conversation this morning. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Joey Wolf of the Havura Shalom Congregation. We're continuing our conversation of Zionism and related topics. We're certainly going further afield to talk about more broadly the conflict in Palestine-Israel. So give us a call this morning, 503-231-8187. Do we have another caller on the line?
Yes. This is Jamie.
Hey, Jamie. Welcome to One Land, Many Voices.
Thank you. I have a question and then a short comment. My question, something I've been wrestling with for years, is why is it that the United States so vehemently supports Israel and all of its policies? And, it's got to be more than just that there's a strong Jewish lobby in this country. It seems to me that both Zionism and U.S. imperialism have a lot of characteristics in common. They're expansionist, and they, occupy other people's territory. But a lot of folks say, well, that Israel is leading the U.S. around by the nose. But it seems to me that the U.S. uses Israel to dominate the Middle East by, the Israel invasion of Lebanon or bombing Iraq, or whatever Israel is doing is kind of like the pierce, the leading the U.S. charge, so the U.S. can sit back and say, oh, well, Israel's doing it, we're not. So could you comment on that?
Rabbi Wolf, before you comment on that, we have had folks talk about Zionism as a colonial movement. In your answer, can you address that?
Sure. For one thing, look, there are certain features of Zionism that are sort of vestigial from the colonial world, but in order to distinguish between the interests of the United States and what goes on in Israel, we should recall that Israel is a tiny, tiny, tiny place. Amidst many, many, many much larger countries that are almost wholly, exclusively Muslim, or certainly any Jew would have a hard time living in those countries. Israel's a tiny, tiny place. Even when we talk about expanding, and I think you could tell already, I am not in any way trying to justify what goes on the West Bank. Nor am I trying to justify, by the way, the way that Israel puts a fortress up around Gaza. I don't like either of these features of what's going on in Israel. you could hardly call Israel expansionist or colonial in the traditional sense, in the sense that it extends its web of interests around the world beyond really supporting its own defensive security, overwhelming security interests, and certainly supporting Jews around the world in supposedly, ostensibly helping them feel more safe from the historical threat of anti-Semitism, something that we feel less in this country, thank God, but then Europe is a real issue. So historically, there's good reason that, you know, Israel operates the way that it has. What I would say at this point, though, however, is that it's time, and in the best interests of the Jewish people, for us to recognize that what we really need to be doing is setting up a wholly democratic and just society, that will lower the gauge and the barometer of anti-Semitism and the insecurity of Jews around the world. It will help everybody. It won't in any way get rid of anti-Semitism, which is nothing that we can control, unfortunately. But to say that we're colonials, I doubt it. That Israel operates for its own interests, no question. It's a geopolitical reality. And sometimes, often, those interests are congruent with the United States interests. I might add that an old friend of mine is going to come out with a book, I believe in May or June. His name is Stephen Kinzer, well-known author, very progressive thinker, and he will have a different spin. He will spin it differently, that United States interests, if not congruent with the interests, I can't imagine, of the extremists in the Arab world, I think he's going to spin it differently, and he's going to say that we might think of broader regional alliances of interests, and that's going to have to make Jews in America, Jews in Israel, think twice.
Now, let's stay on this topic, because I'm not sure we've really addressed this whole question of you know, a couple of competing accounts. My own feeling is that it's neither one or the other, but a combination of these factors in terms of understanding U.S. policy towards Israel and the broader Middle East. We just finished up this APAC conference where we had these, you know, astonishing speeches. You had Netanyahu saying, it's not a settlement, it's the capital of Israel. And you had, of course, Hillary Clinton you know, waxing eloquent on this special relationship with Israel that the United States has. So you have this clear role of the APAC and other organizations, a lobby that is influencing certainly at the congressional level and more broadly U.S. foreign policy. But then you also have these strategic interests that the United States has, not necessarily the interests of the people of the United States, but certainly as reflected through the state, that drives U.S. foreign policy. And I think historically, if you look at the alliances that the Israeli state has made with the French, with the British, that also, I think, plays an explanatory role in terms of understanding U.S. policy. What's your view on this? I mean, should we understand U.S. policy in terms of the tremendous influence of those who claim that they support Israel, like APAC?
No, U.S. policy is driven by its own interests. And what we're seeing right now, for instance, is a clear case where United States interests are diverging at this historic moment from the interests of the state of Israel as proclaimed by the government of Israel, Netanyahu's government. In fact, there are those people who want to badger APAC and the pro-Israel lobby, as it's known in this country. And yet, even though I'm predisposed against many of their principles and many of their arguing points, I can't blame them for being effective at lobbying in favor of those principles. But I think at this current moment, we have a clear interest, clear example of a situation in which the Obama government has said, no, you can't. At this point right now, your policies are absolutely incongruous with our own. They don't support our strategic interests in America.
But it's very hard to take that seriously. I mean, there are these statements that are made, but they're not backed up by any substantial, meaningful change in U.S. policy. I mean, if the United States were to as the first Bush administration did, sort of timidly restrict, I think it was loan guarantees. Then it might be possible to take these statements seriously, but unless and until there's something concrete behind the U.S. criticism of Israeli policies, how can we possibly take this as anything more than another promise from a politician to placate a particular constituency?
First of all, I want to be clear in saying that I personally, as an American Jew, would hope that our country would have, America, would have every reason in the world to support the government of Israel. In this particular context, I'm chagrined by the conduct of the government of Israel with regard to settlements and expansion of settlements and confiscation of property and territory. I would hope that pressure would be brought not only from the outside but from the inside by Jews outside of Israel. And by the way, within Israel, there are plenty of Jews who don't like Netanyahu's policies. They don't like the throttling of policy by the right wing in Israel. And I would only hope that things change. But I think until they do change, and we're chagrined by what's happening right now, then we must understand that that foreign policy and strategic expressions of foreign policy change like, I suppose, like ocean liners. They don't change, quickly in the middle of the night. To turn the boat in a different direction takes a lot of time, but signals are already being given.
I want to ask our listeners and our callers to be patient. I've been told by our sound engineer that we have multiple calls waiting already. I don't want to give Rabbi Joey a pass on his comment that Israel is a very, very tiny place because Israel's the fourth largest military in the world. It has nuclear power. The comment about Jews not being welcome in the vast Muslim world, I'll tell you that I don't think Muslims are welcome inside of the state of Israel. There is racism inside of Israel when you're only focusing on the West Bank and Gaza.
I was responding to the notion that we were expansionist beyond the Jordan River or the border with Lebanon. That's all I was responding to. I totally agree with you that it's time for American Jews, especially, to review the notion that we are constantly on the defensive, that we are constantly insecure, meaning that Israel is on the receiving end of all of the terror and fear. You're absolutely right. We are armed to the teeth, and we are no longer the wimp on the block. That changed a long time ago. I completely agree with you. That said, I also have to tell you that the effect of extremist regimes or sects or groups such as Hamas or Hezbollah, but certainly Iran, affects the mentality of Israelis in the street from the right to the left. They are freaked out. And it's easy to understand they're freaked out. So I guess our job is constantly to lower the temperature of the waters, and that's what the policies should reflect. They shouldn't be catalyzing more hostility and animosity.
We have several callers on the line. Our next caller, are you there?
Are you there?
Yes. Go ahead, caller, with your question or comment.
So many things. Wow, I don't even know where to start. It's just so disgusting about this whole Zionism and, again, we're getting back to name-calling, which is the first thing that creates division. We're all humans, we're all people, and we all have feelings, we all bleed, and really, this is just, it's just completely gone out of control. This is a huge conspiracy. I don't get into this too much, but I think what it is a continuation of evil from World War II for energy, and I think what they did is they said, you know what, instead of killing the Jews, I think what we'll do is we'll just put them over here in the middle of this area, and then we'll arm them to the teeth, and we'll create conflict, which will be something that we can use forever to sink in our teeth into the Middle East. And it all goes back to the Christians and the enabling. And I think what we really need to do is get rid of our complete government and start all over with new people that haven't been bought and paid for by the racists and the classist people that are using classism and racism, and get people that we need to quit funding Israel, and we need to quit funding the government so they quit funding Israel. But again, this goes into, you know, this goes deep back into the Tower of Babel. I mean, it's so deep. So how do we really start, you know what, how do we, besides just blowing the Israel off the face of the earth and starting over again, I mean, where do you go from here, you know? So I think what we need to do is stop funding the terrorists, which is our government, and the Zionist government in Israel, quit funding them, and really start teaching core habits and core morals and ethics and values to the children, because the people over 20 are now, or probably over 12, that are now gone mentally in Israel and the United States. So what we need to do is really work on the pre-K kids, I think, huh? The pre-K kids is what's going to save us, right?
Caller, let's let our guest respond to some of your comments.
Well, you said a lot of things, and many of them, I'm entirely sympathetic with. You know, I think probably the most important thing you said was had to do with the children. And I think that, and this, I often say this to my own kids, you know, kids today are increasingly more knowledgeable and more aware and more insistent that we live in a global society. So that we're all going to be answerable to one another, and notions of national or sectarian interests are increasingly going to be anathema to the way that the world is going to be educated to respond to. So, I mean, I think that's probably the most important thing that you said. I mean, because I don't believe that we can afford to be utopianists. We have to hope that we could teach our kids to think in a different way and work together much, much more efficiently.
And I need to remind our listeners that you're tuned to One Land, Many Voices. You're listening to KABU, listener-sponsored community radio at 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis, and 91.9 FM in the Columbia Gorge, and naturally also available as streaming audio at KABU's website at kabu.fm. And if you've missed any of our previous programs, you can go to the KABU website at kabu.fm, and go to the One Land, Many Voices page and listen to any of our past programs, several on this same topic, Zionism and the Middle East. You can also go to pdxjustice.org, where you can also tune into these previous programs and listen to other programs and watch other programs on the Middle East. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Joy Wolf. We're talking about Zionism and related issues.
And let's go ahead and take our next call. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, let me.
Yes, that is you.
Well, I'm not quite the bomb thrower that your earlier caller, but I'm going to make some comments, and I'd like to hear what you think of them. My daughter, we were in a discussion about immigration, and she proposed the idea, which would not be very popular, to open our borders. Just have open borders instead of all this nonsense we do about immigrants coming in. And I don't think Israel could adopt a similar policy at all. They just have tremendous problems.
Well, let's ask our guest to respond to that comment. The idea of opening the borders. This gets to the point of discrimination. As a Jew, for example, I'm a Jew. I was born in Florida, here in the United States. Yeah, can you believe it? And I, of course, have the right to go to Israel anytime and become an Israeli citizen. It's written. I mean, it's a part of Israeli law that I can. Any Jew on the planet can go there and become a citizen. On the other hand, if I'm an Israeli citizen and I marry a Palestinian, I cannot bring my Palestinian wife into the state of Israel. So what about this whole question of borders and the potential of changing that situation? You know, what would you like to see as a normalized relation at the level of the borders of Israel?
Oh, you raise such a painful question. I'll tell you, you know, it's a real irony right now that there are groups in Israel that are working quite hard on how to integrate and take care of Darfuri refugees in Israel. You know, Can you imagine that? So there are Darfuris who sneak over the border into Israel, and you know, we feel like it's an obligation of a just and moral obligation of the society. And on the other hand, our mythology and our institutions, our Zionist institutions, ones that I must acknowledge that I have supported in the past, favoring law of return for Jews exclusively based in the flight from Christian anti-Semitism and later on from Arab lands as well, must be said, at this point is a very, very hard thing for me to deal with. And because as I've grown in my knowledge in retrospect about what happened, as historians have opened the archives, you know, from the late 80s, really the 90s forward, we found out, well, we've all found out about the flight and the terror that was institutionalized to really cleanse the Green Line state of Arab villages, whole populations. And so it's a very, very sad thing to me that Palestinians don't have a right institutionalized to return, to speak about their loss, to grieve, to express the inherent injustice that they've been deprived of property, of home, of connection to their cultural geography. This is an inherent difficulty, one that certainly absolutely needs to be resolved if the conflict is going to be mitigated in any way.
Rabbi Joey, isn't Zionism mutually exclusive of equality for Palestinians?
Well, this has been the whole question all along. And, you know, you've got whole cultural institutions operating to argue it one way or the other. Actually, for good reason, okay? There was momentum at the very beginning, at the establishment of the state. The momentum was due to the fact that we experienced the horror of the Holocaust. Going through the Holocaust, we recognized the need just to save people. In the heat of the moment, people risked all kinds of crazy decisions. And I'm the first to say, by the way, and I think it's very important for people who are within the Jewish community who consider themselves to be radical or progressive or whatever they want to call themselves, to stand up and recognize where they would have been at that moment. I'm sure I would have made many of the same mistakes in making hasty decisions to establish priority and free access and immediate safety to Jews in Palestine. Now I have the benefit of looking over my shoulder and seeing what happened. And so what I see as Jewishly responsible, that is to say, through my own traditions, my own teachings, I'm not just talking about what's written in the Bible. I'm talking about centuries of arguments about how to live a moral and just life. It teaches me that we have to no longer just build what might be called the Jewish state. We have to build the democratic state of Israel. And that's going to involve the re-access of Palestinians to their land, to their stories, to the narratives, to the places that they were brought up.
You're tuned to One Land, Many Voices. We're talking about Zionism once again here on One Land, Many Voices with Rabbi Joey Wolf. Let's go to our next caller.
Yes, the peace process that is referred to by Hillary Clinton in the Middle East, I find offensive. It goes on and on being called that. My question is what... numerically, with the lobby in Washington D.C., what is the Jewish lobby numerically in contrast to the Palestinian lobby, and is there a Palestinian lobby at all in Washington D.C.?
So I will tell you, caller, that I shy away from calling it a Jewish lobby. In my own life, I have so many Jews who are against what's happening in Israel. I really do call it a pro-Israel lobby. Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to be offensive, and I apologize for using the wrong wording. I don't know what kind of wording to use. Basically, I just wanted to know how many lobbyists are there, because the imbalance of our support for Israel versus Palestine is so great. The money must be the imbalancing aspect of it, and I just wanted to know how much money is being funneled into the lobbying process in D.C., and is there any money coming in from the Palestinians lobby?
I can't give you dollars and cents. What I can tell you is that the American Jewish community is very well organized. Historically, for hundreds of years, we were very well organized, as we lived in lands where we had very little power. We were marginal communities, and we got used to the importance of working with people who were not Jewish. It was a matter of just simply figuring out pragmatic ways to move forward. So we are well organized. By the way, I like to say I'm pro-Israel. I think it's very important that we recoin, we take back the notion it wasn't meant to be pro-Israel. I'm entirely pro-Israel. I just don't agree with the majority of people that we identify with, specifically within the AIPAC, who see it one way, and the one way is to support whatever the government of Israel is doing. I'll let Hala maybe talk about about Palestinian.
If I may, so for our last caller, you weren't offensive. I was just explaining how I view it. Rabbi Joey, does pro-Israel for you mean a support of Israel that is there for all of its citizens, Jews and non-Jews alike?
Clearly, for me, and for what it's worth, support of Israel is for everybody to feel secure and invested and enfranchised. And I'm talking about Jews and Palestinian citizens of Israel. I'd like to see the enfranchisement of Palestinian refugees as well. I think that will pragmatically create quite a challenge, but it's a challenge that we need to be resolving and working on, as opposed to hiding from. So that would be my answer.
Yeah, I think the other thing I'd like to mention, I mean, there are certainly different lobbies active on this issue, and a tremendous imbalance. I think, and I agree with Rabbi Joe in terms of the use of pro-Israel, because I think especially groups like AIPAC are supporting a particular set of policies, a very narrow policy range, in terms of the policies of the State of Israel that they're supporting, such as the ongoing settlement and dispossession in East Jerusalem, and the very violent and destructive policies of aggression and blockade in Gaza. On the other hand, it seems to me that as citizens of the United States, especially as citizens of this country, we need to become another force for change in Washington, D.C. And I think of an organization like the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation is perhaps one of the most important organizations that we can not simply point to as a lobby, but we have to point to as representing our own views on this issue, and we need to become engaged ourselves individually. We need to personally become involved in communicating with our representatives in Congress and not allow these policies to solely be influenced by groups like AIPAC or the many other organizations that engage with this.
Within the Jewish community, too, at this point, there is another group. We have an alternative. It's called J Street. It's a nascent but very powerful, suddenly quite organized, up on its feet organization that is moving to give cover to all the elected leaders here in America to support alternative routes to resolve the conflict in the Middle East. Until now, it's, when you only have one specific voice in the Jewish community, then elected officials are going to feel accountable to the masses or the most vocal people or where the money is. But no, there are many, many Jews in America who want to see a just society, who want to feel proud of Israel as they used to at the outset, when they felt that it was an enterprise that was worthy of supporting.
Let's go ahead. We're ready for our next caller. Go ahead, caller.
Hi. Yeah, I guess my question would follow up to a number of the other things that have been brought up. But my main question was to Rabbi Joey regarding his vision of a solution, because it was my understanding that that he adheres to Zionism, and yet he also is advocating a democratic state, and apparently a state for all its citizens, and apparently supports the right of return. Now, if all those dreams are implemented, and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is respected, and UN Resolutions 194 and 242, and so forth, then Israel will lose its Jewish majority, and that is the principal roadblock, that Israel is unwilling to lose its Jewish majority and wants to declare itself both a Jewish and a democratic state, which is just inherently an oxymoron. So I would just like to hear that addressed.
Well, I think you've asked the most important question and the most challenging question. There are those who would call Israel at this point an ethnocracy. Okay? Until very recently, I felt that the only way to move forward, and by the way, I'm a pragmatist, let's leave ideology aside, let's leave, you know, our ideological convictions aside. All I wanted to do was make things better and find routes to make them better. That's politics, okay? Until very recently, I've always said that the only way to go was based on a two-state solution. And a two-state solution would allow, you know, according to that scheme of things, would allow effective separation, as if you're dealing with a married couple. You know, two partners have time to cool their jets, calm their conflict, and ostensibly to develop their own futures, at least in the interim, in the middle term, before you try and create perhaps a more regional confederation idea. Let's just say the two-state solution seemed the most likely way out of this mess. Of course, the two-state solution requires Israel to pull back from outside of the Green Line. It also would require concessions in Jerusalem, which are being hard fought, which are quite in the news these days. It would require, you know, extremist elements on the other side, you know, such as Hamas or Hezbollah, to put down all of their weapons and to make their concessions to allow for people to move forward. Clearly, there would be other issues like returning release of prisoners and all of those kinds of things. But the two-state solution seemed to me the only possible way to get out of this nightmare, this quagmire. But I must say that based on where governments have gone historically, Israeli governments, and where the present government is going right now as we speak, and of course, you know, everybody has heard the news over the last two or three weeks, and I was in Israel when Vice President Biden was slapped in the face, I increasingly have less and less confidence that Israel is inclined in any way, or that it's possible, or even that it's even justifiable to move populations out of areas, even if they have illegally confiscated lands. So I'm coming incredibly to the conclusion that the only way to go in the future might just be the one state. And that, of course, as you have correctly observed, it will be then reconfiguring Israel along the lines of grappling with what it means to be, guess what, a minority in a Jewish state. And then a Jewish state really isn't about majorities. Really what it is, it's about a new idea, a new just society that's predicated on traditionally and historically Jewish principles, which are, after all, about democracy and pluralism, and honoring your neighbor as yourself, and that would be quite an achievement. Now, I'm saying this to you right now. This is a draconian statement because this is not where I've been in the past. But I must say that I'm increasingly less inclined to believe that people are willing to make the two-state solution actually become a part of our concrete reality in this day and age. And I say that with chagrin. But perhaps it is for the best that we stop trying to separate ourselves and become so normal that what we tolerate is arming ourselves to the teeth and training generations to hate one another.
You're tuned to One Land, Many Voices. We're talking about Zionism and the State of Israel and possibly a one-state solution to the Palestine-Israel conflict. If you'd like to take part in this conversation, we still have about 10 more minutes in the program. Call us at 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And we do have a caller on the line. Caller, what's your question or comment this morning?
Good morning. I wanted to do a follow-up question, and I wanted to ask Rabbi Wolf about successful models of what he sees Judaism as following from a strain, as all other religions do, of justice. However, but if you have an ethnocracy, that's been tried for hundreds of years throughout the world by many people. When Spain, for example, became a Catholic state, we know it as the Inquisition. When Germany did its thing, it became, you know, Nazism. And the United States, if we wanted to become a white Protestant state, you would say, well, join the Ku Klux Klan. Realistically, since he is a pragmatist, whenever one group says that it has more rights or special rights over every other group, you find inequality. Now, I'm Palestinian, and when my father went to school in Palestine, there were integrated schools, for example. There was no place where if one wanted to rent an apartment, one didn't ask the question, what religion are you? And one of the costs of making Palestine, now Israel, a state, not just a homeland for Jewish people, but a Jewish state, is now these kinds of questions are asked. And in my opinion, that it, unlike the rest of the world, which has progressed by and large, Palestine, Israel, has regressed because one group has been allowed to say that it has greater privilege. Now, and I wanted to know what his vision was for resolving the conflict in a way that is pragmatic, because we've seen that the Israeli experience has not been any different than any other people's experience in any other country in the world where one group creates privilege for itself. And so I wanted to ask him what he can see. Because, you know, for the first, when progressives were in charge of Israel, the first 19, 20 years, without question, the Labor Party was in charge. You had martial law. And not only if you were an Arab citizen of Israel, almost all the Arab citizens of Israel at that time had their lands furtherly confiscated. They still didn't have integrated schools. So I just wanted to have him speak to a vision of not having, of plurality.
Well, I guess that's what I was saying just before your question. I think that's what I was commenting on. I will say that what's happened within the Jewish community is that apologists for what happened in Israel during the first 20 or 30 years, and right up until now, for that matter, they speak the language of Jews getting used to having power. And they talk about trying to grapple with the novelty of having power. And they use something, they use a linguistic formula that I'm not comfortable with. They say that we have a discomfort with having power and all the accoutrements of a state. I'm in agreement with you in that, okay, we have taken on that process for the last 40 years of growing more and more comfortable with the emergency powers of establishing this regime and excluding others, excluding people who were there to begin with. And now it's time to come back around to the other direction. So I'm totally in agreement with you that we need now in concert with our own teachings, our own Jewish cultural teachings. They're not just the exclusive province of Orthodox Jews, by the way, to recognize that what we have to create is a just society that honors others, that is pluralistic. I'm totally in agreement with you. I think it's an indictment of the whole project, and I have to look squarely at that and say mea culpa.
Let's go ahead and take our next call. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, I'm interested in your opinion of the way the Obama administration is handling the latest slap in the face, as you put it.
Yes, I'm totally supportive of the Obama administration, and it's unbelievable to me because I was just in Israel to see how it's an incredible thing across the center and to the right. Of course, people are tiring Obama as being an enemy of Israel. And to date, in fact, my friends on the left were not supporters of Obama either because they felt that he caved. Now you have him standing up and saying to Netanyahu, enough. You know, when Netanyahu and others within his coalition are going and establishing homes in Palestinian areas of Jerusalem, for instance. Let's leave out the territory. Let's talk about Jerusalem. When they're going to places like Sheikh Jarrah, or they're going to places like Silwan, which were 100% holy Palestinian villages, they cannot be viewed as anything other than as inciters because I know people, okay, who claimed some kind of pride, you know, pride of possession, we'll call it, that their children going and living in these places. And, my mouth dropped open. And then I had to say, you call this a good thing? What's the matter with you? The people were so narrow-minded, proud that they felt that this was a good thing to do. This can only shut down any notion of future dialogue, conversation, coexistence. Any sense, of course, of, you know, there being access to in East Jerusalem as a capital. By the way, there's plenty of sections of East Jerusalem still to this day where there could be a corridor that isn't exclusively Palestinian. But slowly that's closing off. So, I mean, I totally support what Obama is doing. I urge him, along with J Street and the lobbies of Jews in this country, to stand tough and to say, okay, this is the only way forward. So there are many, many, many Jews who support Obama in terms of what he's doing.
Go ahead, and we have another caller on the line. We really want to hear from you, and we're coming to the last few minutes of our program, so I think this will be our last call. Go ahead, caller.
Are you there, caller?
Hello, is it me?
Yes, it is. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Yes, I'm enjoying the show. I have a question. We all know that Israel was founded along controversial lines, obviously a two-state solution should be the bare minimum in terms of giving the Palestinians some sense of dignity and an independent state. So when you say that these days you're drifting towards the idea of a one-state solution, that seems to me to be really the ultimate elimination of the root Palestinian sense of dignity, because they wouldn't even be entitled to their own independent country anymore. They would just be absorbed in a larger state, which they rightly object to from the start. What do you say about that?
Well, I have to say to you right now that I'm a cosmopolitan. I really believe, you know, I don't think the answer to everything is and this is coming from someone who's been a Zionist his whole life. I don't think the answer to everything is just that, you know, we have to have our independent enclave, you know. So I'm, you know, like, you know, I don't know. I don't want to offend any people who feel very strongly that Quebec should be separate from Canada, or, you know, that any nation that wants its independence shouldn't have its own territory. It should have its own institutions, its cultural institutions. But I do think that the answer toward moving toward a more peaceful future is along cosmopolitan lines, where it's not just based on ethnicity, but where people can live together. So that's my hope in terms of when I talk about a single state. That's my Jewish view. The more just view is that people can live in a more pluralistic environment.
And my Palestinian just view is exactly the same as your Jewish just view, which is a union of Palestinian Arabs and Israeli Jews living together with human equality, social equality, economic equality, a state, we don't care what it's called, a state of all of its citizens.
And you've been listening to One Land, Many Voices. Our very special guest this morning is Rabbi Joseph Wolf of Havura Shalom Congregation right here in Portland, Oregon. We've been talking about Zionism and a whole host of other issues related to the Israel-Palestine conflict. We hope you tune in next month to One Land, Many Voices to continue our conversation of Israel-Palestine and the search for a just peace for the region.